Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our multi-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Susan, and welcome to everyone out there.
Today is a special day, and it's a special program because we have three live in-studio guests. Though it's not getting much attention locally, today is International Women's Day. Hunter Martin, a senior at Iowa State in public relations and women's studies, will be with us later in the program to give us some of the history and background of this day, how it's celebrated, and why it matters to women around the world, but especially in the U.S. And in honor of Women's History Month, our third guest will be Rosemary Harris, who came to Ames yesterday to portray Nita Snook, an early Iowa aviator, best known for teaching Amelia Earhart to fly. But to start the show, we'll have our monthly report with Leanne Harter, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager for Story County.
And welcome, Leanne. I'm glad to have your report now as a regular feature of Local Talk on Wednesday, because we like to focus on what's happening in the county. But Leanne, I think you're lucky to be here today. Tell us, in the recent storm, was that Monday night? What happened to your house?
It was good morning. And it was Monday night, and I just hope the saying, I believe it goes, lightning never strikes twice. I hope that holds true for the Harter household. Our house in Nevada was struck by lightning, and we don't know what caused it. We have some damage. We have some holes in the walls and nail holes popped out from the strike. And fortunately, though, our entire family is safe, and
now,
that is all that matters.
Did the lightning just follow the plumbing or the wiring? And
the lightning, well, lightning has a mind of its own, and I'm learning a lot about it as we go. But we do have an elevator in our house, and I don't know if that was a magnet or just the sheer construction and location or just an act of God, and he willed it to hit on our house in Nevada,
well,
Iowa.
Now, you were home at the time, is that right?
We were home.
What did it sound like?
Indescribable.
Wow.
I tried asking my 11-year-old son how you would describe it. And he just said it was a big boom and then clicking and then a crash. It was all that in one. And I think because we were inside where it hit, it wasn't as loud as where it was outside. I have a friend that lives three blocks away, and she was inside her residence, inside her bathroom, and felt it three blocks away.
Now, the power was out and everything?
We have about half of our house in power. And, yes, it was a really cold night in our house. We don't have any heat. So that's going to be fixed here soon, we hope. And a lot of appliances were toasted. And the toaster works, though.
But your children will have a great story for their kids.
They will.
They will. So that was history.
History.
Oh, wow. Well, let's get back to the present. You're going to talk about happenings in the county here.
I am. I want to start out, though, really wearing a different hat and plugging International Women's Day. There is an event happening in Nevada at noon today. We are, as the United Methodist Women of the Nevada Methodist Church, we are doing a bell ringing. It's our annual event at noon. So if you hear bells ringing in Nevada at that time, it's in honor of International Women's Day.
How many will be ringing bells?
I'm not sure how many. Last year we had about five of us out there.
Wow.
And we have a big bell, and we're hitting it with a hammer. It's pretty powerful, actually.
Well, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer. Oh, don't let me sing. Go ahead and talk us about the county.
Well, in Story County, we hit a huge milestone on social media yesterday. We found our 1,000 follower, 1000. I can't say that very well. And so I want to thank those of you that follow us already. And if you're interested, our official Twitter feed is at Story County, Iowa. And I was really pushing it, and I was so happy that we hit 1,000 yesterday. That's a great milestone. And then actually Monday, not only was my house struck by lightning, but 50 years ago, that was the groundbreaking. So March 6th, 1967, of what we now call the Administration Building in Nevada. The old county courthouse. In 1967, it was considered ultra-modern, state-of-the-art, And it now is no longer the courthouse. It's the admin building. But with that, I just want to tease you guys with something we have coming ahead and play a little bit of trivia, if you'd agree.
Oh, I'm ready. Susan, are you ready?
No, I don't think so. But you, that's why you're doing the...
Okay, well,
you're here.
Okay. Let's mine my mind here.
And I don't have any fun prizes, maybe next month. Here's the first stumper. What year was Story County established?
Okay, we became a state.
What boundaries was Story County established?
Well, we became a state in 1846. So I'm saying 1847.
You were right to begin with 1846.
Really?
The legislature established the boundaries in 1846.
Hey, half right.
But in 1853, it was officially set by the legislature that Nevada was the county seat. Who is Story County named after?
Judge Story, who was on the Supreme Court at the time we became a state in 1846.
Exactly. And then last one. What is the area of Story County in square miles?
Square miles.
And here's maybe the easier one. What shape is Story County?
Well, Story County is a square, mm-hmm. and it would be a square. Boy, how many miles would be in there? 186 square miles.
Yeah, the six, right? 576 square miles.
Oh, now, see, that's just geography. Sorry, teacher.
And it's early in the morning. There are 16 townships in Story County.
Well, I got 2 out of 3, Leanne.
You did. You did probably a lot better than maybe an early morning. Cup of coffee could help.
Well.
But I encourage you and listeners to remember those answers through April. We'll be kicking off a month-long trivia contest in celebration of National County Government Month. Celebrated nationwide by all the counties throughout the United States. We'll also have a 50th anniversary event of that groundbreaking I already mentioned. That will be on Tuesday, April 4th, beginning at 9 o'clock a.m., and we encourage the public to come. We'll have a little open house, and we actually have the original gold shovels from 50 years ago that were used in the groundbreaking event.
The gold shovel.
The gold shovels.
Yes.
If I have some time, I just have a few quick announcements.
Go ahead. Yep.
Okay. In the news, you might have heard about or read about the birth certificates that are really small and wallet size that were issued from May of 1993.
See, I'm old enough. Mine is on parchment. I don't have to worry about that.
Well, all three of my kids qualify for this. They're small wallet sized. They were issued from May 1993 to October 2009. They don't contain enough information to be valid. So Story County Recorder Stacy Herridge has announced that her office will be providing exchanges of those birth certificates for those birth certificates issued in Story County.
Well, now, they don't have to go down to the Lucas building?
Right. Then? If you had your birth certificate issued and recorded in Story County, you can go ahead and go over to the recorder's office.
Well, that's a relief for a lot of people to drive to Des Moines.
Yeah. It is. I just encourage people to contact the recorder's office at 382-7230. That's 382-7230.
And Leanne, you might repeat those years again.
Yep, that's a good suggestion. May 1993, and the months are important. May 1993 through October 2009. There's more information about that on our website, too, at storycountyiowa.gov. Proposed budget hearing by the Board of Supervisors next Tuesday, March 14th. A fifth year of a balanced budget in a row, which is quite an accomplishment, and they'll be also approving the capital improvements plan. I want to encourage everyone to watch our website and Story County Conservation's page specifically for updates and construction on the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. Work is starting, and the message that we really want to get out there is, yes, trees were going to be removed, and in some cases, substantial parts of forested areas are going to be removed. That's planned, and it's necessary to encourage, and while it looks like habitat's being destroyed, it's really to encourage a more healthier and functional ecosystem in the end.
That sounds great, and Leanne, this is going to be a regular feature. You're going to come in and report on Wednesdays.
Once a month. Yes, it's a monthly feature.
It's a monthly feature. Well, I'm the last to know, but we'll see you once a month on Wednesdays to report on Story County. Leanne,
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I have to do a postscript on your report on the Tedesco. I happened to sit next to Ted Tedesco at the Nita Snook presentation yesterday.
Yeah.
And what happened was he said, yes, it's going to be extended. It's going to go west. So it's
pretty incredible. The master plan is on our website, and it's 37 acres of pure enjoyment when it's going to be created.
Yeah, and there's more to come.
Yes, a lot
Sounds
more to come.
Wonderful. Thank you, Leanne.
Yes. Thank you very much. Have a great rest of the week.
And now we've got some music. Is that right, Susan?
That's right. We have
some Bread and Roses.
Marching, we battle too for men, for they are women's children, and we bother them again. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching, marching, a number.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been listening to Bread and Roses, sung by Judy Collins. And this song has quite a history in connection with International Women's Day. And our next guest, Hunter Martin, who you may have heard last Friday, is back with us to tell us what's going on today. This is the real International Women's Day, right?
Yeah, today is officially International Women's Day around the world.
Yes, and in Ames, we celebrated over the weekend so that we could have time to have face-to-face things. What is going on around the world today?
Well, today is a global day of celebration for the social, economic, and cultural roles of women, as well as a call for gender equality. So going around the world today, there are different rallies and protests and marches and just events in over 35 different countries. Just to name a few, there are events going on in Kenya, China, South Korea, India, Japan, Indonesia, Australia, as well as some of the other ones like France and England, and definitely, of course, here in America.
Well, what kind of events are these? Are they marches? Now, I know that there was a suggested a day without women.
Yeah. Here in America, the event is actually the lack of event, basically. It's kind of tracing back to the roots of the International Women's Day, which was a peaceful protest. And so kind of how they've adapted it this year after the March on Washington back in January, they've adapted it to a strike or a day without women. So it's suggested that women who are able take the day off work, all women refrain from shopping, everyone wear red in solidarity, and kind of try to avoid doing the unpaid labor as well, which primarily falls on women. So that, for example, would be childcare, other family care, any reproductive work, domestic work, kind of those things that we typically think of as women's work.
And being in a radio station doesn't count, right?
It definitely depends on kind of your view. So the suggestion for everyone to stop working is, I mean, it's not entirely realistic for every woman, and the protesters recognize that. So, for example, I am an Iowa State student, and I will be at work today because I can't afford not to. And so they definitely recognize that not everyone is able to completely take the day off. I think that it would be not their suggestion that if you're a stay-at-home mother and you have an infant, to not care for your infant. So I think it's one of those things where you're supposed to participate as much as you are able to. So that's definitely something I would encourage everyone to wear red. That's something very simple and kind of a minimum level that I think people can take part in. Not shopping today unless it's a female-owned or minority-owned business was part of the suggestion. And I think that's something we can all easily, as long as you stay off the computer and avoid online shopping as well, I think that's something we can all attain to.
Yes, well, on Friday when you were in Andrea Gronau of Worldly Goods was also here. And they are celebrating in Worldly Goods because that's one store where people could shop. They said, you don't have to shop. Just come in and have tea.
Yeah. But exactly. And, she's a woman business owner. So regardless if you buy anything, like definitely supporting her, I think, is kind of part of the, gender equality goal.
Well, actually, Worldly Goods, I don't know whether she's technically the owner. Worldly Goods, of course, is an international co-op. So many of the goods made there are really made by people throughout the world, women who are surviving, and they get half of the price.
Yeah.
So that must be a huge amount for, a lot of the women who make these things.
Yeah, it's really incredible, the free trade that the store operates under, because it allows women entrepreneurs in a lot of developing countries opportunities to really, enrich their lives and the lives of their children, usually, possibly providing them education, providing them shelter and security, food, a lot of those different things that can seem very small, but that is probably what is supporting this woman or this woman's community is this free trade.
Well, one of the things that was mentioned last Friday was that it will take perhaps until 2085, something like that, to have real parity. Now, could you why don't you talk a little about what the inequalities are? A lot of people look at the sort of token advances that women have made, women CEOs, women presidential candidates, and so forth.
Yeah, definitely I can speak to that. People like to point out, the one woman that has made it, and definitely, there are women that have made it, but only 4% of those women are CEOs globally, only 4%. And globally, only 23% of women are in the legislative branch of government or in their parliaments. And I looked up some numbers. Women representing their countries in the legislative branch, the top 10 countries are Rwanda, Bolivia, Cuba, Iceland, Nicaragua, Sweden, Mexico, Finland, and South Africa. The United States is number 104. So if you can think of those 10 countries and then compare them to what we think of as a developed country that, considering America is what we think of as like this huge world power, while we don't represent everyone within our country the same, women typically still have the lesser paying jobs, and not just the 70, cents to a dollar that we think of. Women typically get kind of herded into lower paying or lower skilled jobs, which actually factors into that lower pay. And women, as we know, economically typically need more money because women typically are the ones raising children. So it's kind of like we're giving women less money, and then we're also expecting women to spend more money because they have more people to take care of. again, that's kind of speaking about reproductive care and care work in general. Women do the majority of child care in America. Women do the majority of other family care, including elderly parental care. And that's something I wanted to talk about, is kind of the condition of women and some of the different things that why women are protesting around America today or even around the world, as some of these issues are. One of the biggest topics in the U.S. right now is the lack of paid maternity leave. And this is something that I'm not going to go much into maternity leave, but I think that it's really important that we don't only get maternity leave, paid maternity leave. I think it's really important that we also include paid paternity leave in there, because right now maternity leave, I think, stigmatizes pregnant women and that expectation of women to get pregnant. And so I think it kind of hinders them in the workplace, versus if we have paid family leave for both parents or all parents, it would kind of destigmatize that. So if a man is able to take paternity leave, it'll kind of help enforce, like, that fathers are fathers and that fathers can be fathers to newborns, and it's not just a women's role.
Probably good to call it family leave, so
yeah.
It's not, you know, really, it doesn't apply to one sex.
Right,
you know, if you use a term like family leave, then that's more male-female.
Yeah, and I think family leave, calling it family leave, I think is definitely also necessary because, you know, maternity and paternity doesn't really recognize that women also tend to take time off to care for parents or other sick family members. So I think that family leave not only should include pregnancy, but also being able to include the care of other people in your lives.
Yes, and I think that there's something else that I'd like to just insert here, because it was a realization that came to me in the 70s. I was involved in an early women's history course, and the text for that was The American Woman from 1920 to 1970. And what they found in the study was that there had been a steady increase of women working. Now, after World War II, the myth is that women went to work during World War II and then they were happy to go home and, you know, be home mothers, just be housewives again and buy their appliances and so forth. Well, what they found out was that women who had had a little discretionary money and also may want some things that they couldn't have had before were working. And that increased and increased and increased. And what happened in the 70s was not that women suddenly had women's liberation and they all wanted to go to work. Suddenly, the balance was that as many women were working as were not working. And so suddenly, the child care and maternity leave and all of these things became really important. It wasn't so much liberation. It was because at that time, also, wages were beginning to be frozen. So if you wanted to continue your standard of living, more and more families had to have two earners. And this is, and it's still true.
It's very interesting. I had, Iowa State holds a number of lectures, and this fall I had pleasure to attend Lynn Povich, who was a journalist in the 70s and filed a sexual discrimination lawsuit against her employers. And it was so interesting listening to her speak, because almost all of the issues they talked about, all of the different issues they had and the charges they filed, are still things happening today. And so it's, you know, we talk about, it's kind of, you brought up that number of how it's kind of the gender equality, you know, is 200 years away and that number keeps getting farther and farther. I, like, don't think that we're accelerating at the rate toward gender equality that we should be. And I do think in some areas we tend to slide back, which is, you know, again, in this world where people can be dismissive and say, oh, you know, women are equal. They can be in the workforce. It's like, yes, on, you know, paper level. But it's like I still hear stories about women that are discriminated or face sexual harassment or all these different issues. And there are so many other things kind of just affecting women that are just beyond women in work that are just kind of also holding women back. Like, for example, the prevalence of sexual assault on campuses is something that women primarily experience, at least that is reported. And that can be very detrimental to her education. And many sexual assault survivors drop out of college. And so, as you know, economically, we know if you have a college degree, your earning potential goes significantly up. So it's something like that seems kind of unconnected or small, like a small connection. But it's like, I think that these are things that are having tremendous impact, cultural impact as well, that we kind of don't recognize the bigger picture. I think we kind of tend to think of these issues as separate. But I think rape culture is something that definitely plays into the business environment and kind of that bro culture and the boys club of different businesses, especially that have been traditionally male oriented. But I think that all of these things are cultural phenomenons that have existed and continue to exist because we're not doing more to stop them. This International Women's Day, the theme is Be Bold for Change. And at our event on Sunday, there were a number of women that talked about the different things that they wanted to be bold for change were, and a lot of it was speaking up. It's called positive disruption. So if you, it's like, you know, if you hear somebody say something, don't just stay silent, because if you're staying silent, the idea is that, like, you're kind of siding with that person. It can be something small. It can be something just say, like, I don't agree with you and walking away, or it could be calling them out directly, like saying, that's racist, that's homophobic, that's sexist. You know, calling these things out, because the more we hear them, the more we normalize them and think that these are just natural things that occur, and then they transfer into the workplace. And so we're creating this culture at a ground level, and it, you know, continues all the way up into those top CEO positions, which women are kind of held back from.
Well, that's a very interesting insight. And
you know, as a matter of fact, I think I was reading, in recent years, Iowa was number one in the number of dual-earning parents, you know, employment of both husband and wife. And that's probably still true. We're one of the states that lead in the number of people who are employed both parents. And that's significant in some way, I think, hopefully.
Yeah, I do. I do think and I think part of that's the choice, is that I think women should be allowed to choose to work and should be encouraged to work if that's what they want to do. It's a lot about empowerment, basically, empowering women to want to choose that. Although I definitely agree with, like, being able to stay home. But it's kind of like you mentioned, that's not necessarily financially feasible for a lot of households.
Child care is enormously expensive.
Yeah.
It's even for people with good incomes. In some ways, when you many child cares have a sliding scale. Although it's probably, you know, equally difficult for everybody, in depending on what their income is. But it's, you know, it's huge.
It's, yeah, and that's actually an international issue. For example, Japan, childcare is so difficult to get that many women are forced to have to stay at home with their children, because they, even if they are the top person in their country, they cannot, it's not that they can't even afford, they just cannot hire somebody, because it is so difficult to find childcare in Japan that they are forced out of the workforce because they have a child and they can't just leave the child at home alone.
Yeah, well, when you look at single parent families, overwhelming majority are women.
Yeah.
And then they have a compromised income, plus the child care issue holds them from having full-time employment or, you know, the kinds of jobs they can apply for or aspire to. And so this is a significant thing when you look at the number of single-parent families. Almost all of them are women.
Exactly. And those women, again, it's kind of that stigma of having children. A lot of women are held back from promotions or pay raises because they're not seen as committed to their company. The kind of current, and it's people are trying to change this culture, but the kind of current culture in the workforce is that you have to be completely dedicated 100% of the time, 24/7, you know, always there, always working, staying those late shifts. And as any parent knows, that's not realistic. Like, you're going to have kids that have events. You're going to have kids that get sick. And again, a lot of that is primarily taken care of by women or by single women. And it really kind of holds women back from those promotions or pay raises.
Well, now, there is some good news on the horizon. For some time, women have outnumbered men in undergraduate school.
Yeah.
And recently, they're beginning to outnumber men in grad school, which I support. And I think probably that bodes well for the future, because people who attain higher management status are going to make sure they're very egalitarian in who they choose to be promoted within the organization. So that bodes well, but there's still a lot of, and I think probably now there's a backlash because males were so injured by the recession that they are, there's a lot of anger there because they lost the industrial jobs and that sort of thing. So there's a sort of a backlash there where males really are resentful and angry. And then wages have been flat versus the cost of living since 1979, and everyone's compromised in that equation. And so dual incomes are an absolute necessity to be a middle-class dweller, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that there are a lot of different factors moving around that we're, you know, we're seeing a lot of positive change, and we're kind of seeing some of those fall back slightly. I think that there are going to be some very different, like, just a lot of change within the next 4 years. And some of it might be good, and some of it might not be as good.
We're looking at something that might not be good.
Yeah. Just to kind of talk again about other, hot topics in America right now, women's reproductive choice is definitely in question. And that's actually something I was looking up, that's the protest going on in Ireland today for International Women's Day, is about their basically lack of abortion rights. It's in their constitution, actually. And so there are, obviously a number of Irish women protesting that. And here in America, one of the biggest issues around that is funding of Planned Parenthood, which, I don't want to talk about, the really hottest topic of all of this, but I'd really like to speak to women's health and that those different organizations that also provide abortions, the primary reason that those facilities exist is to provide women, especially women living in poverty, access to health care and family planning and contraceptives and those resources that they would not get anywhere else. And a lot of those things, it goes beyond just, children, and it goes into, their actual health needs. And biologically, women are much more complicated, physically, than men are. And so that's where I like the word equity better than equality, because I think that equity would be women have more access to health care because we're physically, we have physically more health care needs. And so that's kind of one of the hottest topics right now, is kind of defunding that, which I think we'll see thousands of women, especially those most vulnerable, without any of those health care methods.
Well, I hope a lot of these women who are thus affected realize that revenge can be held in the ballot box. So, basically, we're talking about change that, the tide ebbs and flows back and forth. And I view this as a time when women need to be really alert and protective in sustaining their rights, both reproductive rights and others, because there are always people who are very traditional in their thinking who want to assign women to subordinate roles.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to me to talk about tradition and talk about history, because it kind of changes over time. Talking about women working during World War II, the roles of women hasn't been constant, but I think we like to think that it has been. We like to picture the 50s woman and think that's what we've always, that's what women aspire to be. But even in the 50s, there are women doing other things. And so I think it's kind of interesting to talk about the roles of women, because it's changed so much. And then in other ways, it hasn't changed at all. But you can look at any different time period of history and it's going to be completely different. Geographically, it's going to be different. Here in the Midwest, when women were settling Iowa, we had lots of different roles than women back in New York who, did typically stay at home. But here in Iowa, my great-grandmother was out working on a farm beside my great-grandfather.
Oh, farms are the ultimate egalitarian employment situation, because husband and wife work together in every way.
Yeah. And I think that is kind of what International Women's Day is for, is just recognizing those roles of women, because, when we think of farmers, we think of men, and kind of recognizing that their wives aren't just the wives of farmers, their wives are farmers too.
And internationally, in many African countries and perhaps others, the women do the majority of the agriculture. And our time is closing. I'd love to get into the international discussion. I was going to ask you, what do you consider the most important things that can be done around the world to change the condition of women? Do you have a short answer for that?
I do, yeah. I prepared several action steps the kind of like takeaway from this whole discussion. Number one for today is wear red, just even if it's just a show of solidarity. So pull out your cyclone stuff and wear some red today. One of the other biggest things is that, again, it's kind of a hot topic, but I really think that people should take today, even if it's just 15 minutes, to read up on the different issues, because the more you're educated, the more you can kind of promote these different things. So stay off Facebook. Go to, you know, a reliable website. My recommendation for a good starting place is UN Women or the International Women's Day page. You know, you can kind of find resources from there. But that's, I mean, I promote education all the time, but I really think that that is key to kind of developing your beliefs and focusing your beliefs. And try not, you know, stay away from bias on either side. But yeah, and just, you know, stay off Facebook when you're looking for these different articles.
I'd like to say that I will not be shopping today.
Yes, not, yeah, that's another
shopping
step.
Okay, well, thank you, Hunter. It's still early enough so people can follow you today in the 7 o'clock, and even at 7 this evening, they'll still have time to start becoming better educated in these.
Yeah, it's never too late to start.
Well, you know, it's been so enlightening for me as a male to join this segment because, you know, I really think that guys need to hear some of these things and be aware of some of these things because we can be very obtuse about women's issues and tone deaf. And I've noticed a lot of the people who are most vocal against abortion are people who don't have a chance to ever be pregnant.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yes, I have. But no, I think you speak to a really good point that it's, we call it the women's movement, but it really is a human rights issue. And so it's, definitely encourage all people to be educated and to support this because we all have women in our lives. And so we should all be kind of supporting them in any way we can.
And we all know women who are facing unusual situations. They might have a spouse who's disabled. They might be a single parent. And, you know, there are a lot of single parents who come from middle-class families. Because of outcomes, they end up as single parents. Now, my niece down in Atlanta has her doctorate, and she chose to be a single parent. She adopted a child and is bringing her up. But if you're being raised by a doctor in psychology, I think you have a good odd to be okay.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
Well, you know, it's so delightful to have you today and
yeah,
so
I
delightful
like
to hear what you have to say. Remember, it's International Women's Day, and I'm wearing red underwear. So.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
Well, marching, we battle too for men, for they are women's children. And we mother them again. Our life shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching.
This is KHOI Community Radio for Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. And this is Local Talk on Wednesday. Host today, Susan Franson, and I'm Paul Wearson. We just heard from Hunter Martin telling about International Women's Day, celebrating today. And to carry on to that topic, into Women's History Month, we have Rosemary Harris, who was in town yesterday to perform two presentations as Nita Snook, the first woman aviator in Iowa. Welcome, Rosemary.
Thank you. Good morning.
And it's radio, so you can't see Rosemary, but she is adorned in beautiful clothing with a nice necklace and looks very much like the after party at a theater party.
Oh.
Tell us a little bit about Nita Snook.
Well, she is not a native Iowan, but I'm making her one because she went to Ames High School and she attended Iowa State University for a little bit, and then she built her plane in the backyard of her parents' home here in Ames.
Now, date her for me. That was what era?
Well, that would have been around 1917, 1918 or so, when she was building her plane and learning how to fly. And she learned how to fly at a Davenport Aviation School.
I understand the home that she lived in Ames still exists. Is that
828 Wilson Avenue.
828 Wilson. Don't flock out there today and stand in the lawn. But that's where it all happened.
Yes.
And so Nita, from the very early on, was very mechanically oriented.
Yes,
and interested
from
in
early age. She had a very avid interest in automobiles and what made them work, because her father was interested in automobiles.
And so she was actually encouraged in her family to do these things. And then she learned to fly when?
I think she entered the Davenport Aviation School around 1917. But it didn't last very long, of course, because of World War I. And also the president went up in a flight and he was killed. Accident over Credit Island, and that ended her education.
Well, so, aviation was somewhat risky at that time.
Very much so.
You know, engines could fail, and of course, you were very subject to the weather. You know, weather really marginalized
flight
at that time. And really, I'm just thinking it's so early in aviation that there aren't a lot of men in aviation, there aren't a lot of people. And here she is at such an early time. And then what did she do after? What did she do with that flying skill?
Well, she hadn't soloed, but she did have a business here in Ames after she got her plane going. Mm-hmm. But she decided that you can't fly an airplane in Iowa winters. And so she decided to go to California. And she dismantled her plane and put it on a boxcar and shipped it to California. And she met a fellow out there who was just building his own airplanes and had an airfield. And so she connected with him, and then she began to give lessons and all of this. And that's how she met Amelia Earhart, who came out one Sunday afternoon.
Amelia Earhart came to this airfield.
Yes.
And immediately identified with Dita, I bet, right?
Yes.
Of course.
Although Amelia's father was reluctant about having her learning to fly, so he insisted that Amelia learn only from a woman pilot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And so I bet they were rather intimate in terms of knowing each other.
Yes, they became very good friends and flew together for over a year. However, their personalities and characteristics were very different. Their backgrounds were similar because Amelia had even gone to high school in Des Moines.
Really?
Yes, for 1 year, her junior year. But their friendship waned after a year because they were so different in their outlook on flying. Amelia did it for fun and for amusement, whereas Nita, this was her way of making a living. And she had such a focus on aviation and flying.
I just wonder if Amelia was more of a risk taker. Maybe that's
not
so
really. No, Nita was the risk taker because,
right?
As you say, you know, aviation was so delicate and dangerous in those days. And as it turned out, Nita was still operating her field, and she had married, and she found she was pregnant. And she vowed that if she had a healthy baby, she would give up flying forever.
Did Did that happen?
Yes. She didn't fly again until 1977.
So date that. When was the baby born?
In 1922.
And so all this time, she was true to her word not to fly until 1977.
Yes, sir.
You know, I'd really trust Nita with my billfold, I think. She sounds like someone who's tried and true and loyal and really a woman of her word. So how did she spend her life then?
And her husband bought acreage near Los Gatos, California, and they raised peaches and apricots and miniature horses and all of this, and she also gave speeches about her flying experiences.
And they had several children then?
No, they had one son.
Just one son. Mm-hmm. Just curious, what became of him?
Well, they did not want to encourage his interest in flying. And so he was a businessman, and he did fly once commercially, but he didn't tell his mother.
Oh. There was her last flight. Tell us about that.
Well, it was in 1977, and she was asked to fly in a replica of the Spirit of St. Louis in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Charles Lindbergh's flight.
Wow.
So she went up, and the pilot turned the controls over to her, and it was just like she'd never been away from flying.
Wow. You know, and when you look at the Spirit of St. Louis, it really bothers me because there's no frontal view. You have to look out the side. If you've ever seen the Spirit of St. Louis, there's no winch. You know, the chassis and everything is right in your eye level, and you can only see around the side. And so that's a very unnerving plane to fly if you can't see directly ahead.
Well, so was hers.
Yeah.
It was a little fragile piece of machinery, I think.
Well, you know, she was really a pioneer and really someone who was sort of present at creation. Now, you do a presentation on Nita. How do you frame that, and what is, do you do that as, obviously, well, you're doing her.
Yes, I do a first-person portrayal of her and dress as she would have back in the day, and tell about her history and I don't know, just kind of relate to her. She was a feisty little thing with red hair.
Well, you've got red hair.
Yes. And the president of the Davenport Flying School, which was the only one that accepted her, said he just knew she, if wanted to fly, she'd have red hair.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of Rhonda Fleming and some of the actresses who had red
hair. Well, Shirley MacLaine, of course, who was out in her own little world.
Well, yeah, she's in one of her incarnations. I don't know what year she's in now, but she's still alive. Well, now, how often do you present this?
Well, she's not the only one that I do.
Oh, you do several?
Yes, I do 11 notable Iowa women.
Wow.
All of them except one have some connection to Iowa because that's my quest. I'm a former school teacher, and once a school teacher, always a school teacher.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I want to tell Iowans what treasures we have in Iowa that very few people know about. For example, I do Ola Babcock Miller. I don't know if you know who she is or not. She was born and is buried in Washington, Iowa, which is only 17 miles down the road from where I live. And she was Iowa's first female Secretary of State, and she, while she had that office, she formed the Iowa Highway Patrol 82 years ago.
Recall a woman formed the Highway Patrol.
Yes, and she's called the mother of the Highway Patrol, and the patrolmen still know who she is. And her motto, her integrity is still very evident in
this
organization.
There's a big oil painting of her at their headquarters.
Well, there is I don't know about their headquarters, but there is a state office building named for her, you know.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. So who's your favorite character? Is Nita one of your favorites?
Yes, because she's a lot of fun to do. Because personally, I don't like to fly. I belong to the White Knuckle Club. But I really think I relate more to Lou Henry Hoover. And she was my first lady, and I only live 35 miles from West Branch, so I go there often to do my research and connect with her.
Oh, I think that presidential library there is fine.
It's wonderful.
For research,
wonderful.
For a variety of topics, and then you understand how terrific Herbert Hoover was in saving Eastern Europe from
Absolutely.
Starvation. And all the things he did after both world wars to sustain a very distraught and needy population.
Very much so.
All the humanitarian awards you see at that birthplace are richly deserved.
That's right.
And his wife, too. She was interesting, wasn't she?
She was very interesting. She spoke many languages and absorbed the culture no matter where they lived, and they lived in many places throughout the world. And she had her own little projects, and he had his, but they did not want any public adulation. And during the Depression years, they spent their own money. And as a matter of fact, when she died, her husband found a pile of checks in her desk that were never cashed.
Really?
And they were checks that from people that she had helped out with her personal money, and they were repaying her, but she never cashed them.
You know, there's a lot of first ladies who just did tremendous things, because historically, especially in recent decades, you've had first ladies who take up a cause that they want to really promote and be directly involved with. So
yes, and that was, of course, Lou Hoover. Yeah. She was connected with Girl Scouts and physical fitness, she was very concerned with women's rights, and she talked on the radio first before Eleanor did. And she was very passionate about things, but she was very low-key, and she didn't want any recognition for many of these things that she did.
Well, Rosemary Harris, great to have you here today.
Thank you. It's lovely
Rosemary
to be
Harris,
here.
Rosemary Harris, who portrays Nita Snook and a lot of other famous Iowa women. And one more thing we've got on the docket today to honor International Women's Day. And thank you for being with us.
You're more than
and
welcome.
You're still a red-haired beauty, and so is Nita Snook.
Thank you very much.
It's time for our exit, but I want to make a quick little note on Amelia Earhart's letter to Nita Snook. She mentioned that she remembered their discussions about the Quran. And I will use that to announce that tonight the Muslim Student Association will be holding a lecture talking about Islam against terrorism. Come and find out about how Islamic teachings go against the terrorism acts happening in the world today. That's at 7:30 in the Pioneer Room in the Memorial Union. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today have been Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen. Today we heard the March report from Story County by Leanne Harter, an update of International Women's Day from Hunter Martin, and Rosemary Harris with some women's aviation history and a little bit more.
Yes, and Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Thanks to Ron Carson for posting the audio of our programs on our website, along with relevant links to today's stories and information about all our guests. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Bread and Roses, sung by Judy Collins.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And if you would like to join the team as a reporter here, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website at khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from C.Y. Stevens Auditorium, presenting Celtic Fire, an evening of songs, stories, tunes, and dance from the heart of the Emerald Isle. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.